Hi, my name is Colt Clements. I am 16 years old. Today is December 3rd, 2017, and I'm speaking with Stan Clements, who is my father. We are recording this interview in Page, Texas. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child?
Sure, that was a long time ago, but I'll try to remember. I was born in 1952. That was during the Korean War, and so my childhood, I guess I would consider mostly during the 50s. It was, looking back with what I know now, it was a fairly traumatic time. The Korean War was going on, the Cold War was going on, and the nuclear threat and all that, but looking back, I don't remember being afraid of all that stuff, but my mother and my real dad divorced within a year or so of when I was born. And then my mother remarried a couple of years later. So most of my childhood memories are of my mother and my grandparents and my stepdad. As a child, I was probably, you'd say, introverted. Might have been the circumstances I was in, but I was very close to my grandparents, and they were always kind of the rock that held everything together. I like music a lot. My whole life I've been interested in music, and I like to hunt and fish, which I learned later was very important to my real dad. I've always been interested in Indian cultures and learning about that, and I grew up picking up arrowheads and all that sort of thing. So I'd say I had a good childhood.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit about your grandparents?
I can, to some extent. As I said, my parents were divorced when I was very young, and my real dad died shortly thereafter. So I don't know much about his side of the family, but what I do know well is my maternal side of the family. My grandparents were, they were young. Well, let me back up a little bit. They were very poor. They lived way out in the country near Caddo Lake, and they probably were born around 1910, 1911, something like that. And so they came of age during the Depression. And they told me stories of all they had was a wagon to go 14 miles into town to get basic supplies. The rest of what they had, they hunted and they fished and they grew gardens and put up food and all that sort of thing. So it was a very primitive life. It's kind of hard to imagine, that not any further back than that people were having to live like that. Of course, I guess it served us well because we still hunt and fish and put up food. I guess it's different that we don't have to. My grandparents on my mother's side, as I said, they grew up during the Depression. They married young. They had my mother young. And so my mother had me young. So she was 20 when I was born. So they were relatively young when I was born. They were probably in their late 30s. And we were in a small town. They moved to town. And we lived in and around Atlanta, Texas, which is a very small town in northeast Texas. And my mother and I lived about a block from my grandparents. So when I was a small child, my grandparents probably spent as much time with me as my parents did. I was very close to them, and they thought I hung the moon. So it was fun. It was a very good way to grow up, really.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit more about your grandparents?
Yeah, they, as I said, they had a hard life, but they were happy. and I don't think they ever went hungry or anything, but during the 30s, as I said, they moved to a town, Atlanta, and got jobs. My grandfather went to work for the city and eventually became the city water superintendent. And my grandmother did basically manual labor. She worked in a glove factory for many, many years. During World War II, my grandfather was not allowed to enlist in the Army because he'd broken his foot, and they wouldn't let him in. So both he and my grandmother worked at a ammunition factory near Texarkana. I think it was called Lone Star Artillery or something like that. So they would commute about 30 miles. The buses took them there. And they worked there during World War II. And after that, my grandfather worked for the city, and my grandmother did basically manual labor.
Yeah. Can you tell me about your great-grandparents?
I can, to some extent. The only great-grandparents that I ever knew, again, were on my mother's side, my grandmother's parents on my maternal side. And he was named Tom Kitchens. And I can't even remember my great-grandmother's name because we had some nickname for her, grandma or something like that. And again, they had grown up very poor. They had moved to East Texas from Alabama. And, you know, for better conditions, better, easier way to make a living and stuff like that. But even at that, they still had a hard row to hoe in terms of making it. But each generation seemed to build upon the last and improve some. And so my grandparents had it better than my great-grandparents, and my parents had it greater than my grandparents, and just so on down the line. So they all contributed to a great extent to the way we live today. You know, they worked to help their kids and to pass on what little they had to their kids, and it's just accumulated through three generations, and I appreciate that.
Okay. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences on your life?
I can. It's kind of hard to narrow that down because I've had a lot of people that have had important influences on my life. But to narrow it down, I'd say it's most unlikely, but considering where I grew up and when I grew up, in the deep South and in the 50s and 60s. One of the people that I think influenced me most was an African-American man that I went to work for a ready-mix concrete plant. I was always, as a child, I was always interested in working and getting a job. And it was easier in those days because you didn't have all the rules and regulations of having to be 16 or 18 and all that sort of thing. And they didn't have to pay you very much because there weren't all these minimum wage rules and stuff either. So it's easy, a lot easier for a teenager to get a job. So one of the jobs I had, this was not the first job I had, but when I was in high school, I went to work for a ready-mix concrete plant that one of my relatives owned. And they put me to work, and I was just kind of a gopher, kind of do whatever needed to be done. And the man who was my boss, as I said, was an African-American man. He was very talented. He was a good mechanic, and he was just a great human being. He kind of took me under his wing, and I learned a lot about mechanics. I was his mechanic helper when he decided to tear a motor apart, and he taught me how to run the equipment, front-end loaders, dump trucks, just about everything you can think of. And he taught me, really, I got some perspective on race relations, and you know, I guess it left me with a better understanding about how all of us, depending on, regardless of race and what economic status we were in, we were all pretty much the same. And, you know, there's good people and bad people, no matter what. And, man, I just thought the guy hung the moon, and I still do. His name was A.V. James, and he had a twin brother named R.V. James. And the funny thing was, A.V. didn't stand for anything except it was just two letters, A.V., and that was his name. And I pretty much lost contact with him. I did run into him once after I went to college, just randomly ran into him about 200 miles. We both ended up beside the Angelina River one day. He was traveling through, and I was in college, and I just drove out to the Angelina River for some peace and quiet, I guess, and ran into him, and we had a good talk. And I guess that's the last time I ever saw him. And man, I wished many times since then I had been able to tell him what an important influence he was on my life.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is there anyone else who had a big influence on your life?
Well, as I said, there were many, many people that had a big influence on my life, but I'd have to single out my adoptive father, which, you know, I guess you would call him my stepfather, although I didn't think of him that way. He became my father when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and then he adopted me when I was about 6, so he essentially raised me. And he was an interesting fellow. He had been in World War II, and he was very, I'm not sure if this is because of his experiences in life with the war and all that, but he was he was not a demonstrative person. He was not an emotional person. But he loved me, I know, and he did everything he could for me, and he was always supportive of me. And he was another one of the rocks in my life. He taught me to hunt. He taught me to fish. And he taught me everything, really. I learned some about woodworking and, he built a workshop for us when I was, I guess, by the time I was getting old enough to do that sort of thing. And I was constantly making things and building things. And he helped me kind of get into the business of selling birdhouses. So looking back, I think he was just coercing his friends into buying my junky little birdhouses, but that's support, you know. That's what you want from a dad. And even though it was an unusual relationship, I mean, I never saw him cry. I never saw him be emotional about anything. He was very, very reserved, but he was a rock, you know. So he had a big influence on me, and I really appreciate him.
Yeah. And what was his name?
His name was William Samuel Clements. Everybody called him Bully. He says his dad started calling him Bully when he was a baby, so everybody knew him as Bully. And he was born in 1910, which ironically made him older than my grandfather on my mother's side. He was significantly older than my mother. So he was like almost 50 years old when he got me. So very similar to my situation with you. You know, it's an older than average dad, but I guess we bring something to the table. I don't know what, maybe experience.
Yeah. Okay, looking back, what advice would you give to your teenage self?
Okay, that's one. That's kind of a hard one, but I guess it would be that, you know, I wish I had learned as early as you have the importance of working hard in terms of an education and getting the most out of that. I mean, I didn't fail anything. I didn't excel at anything. I just kind of did what I had to do to get by. And in retrospect, I wish I'd have followed your example. You know, like you've worked hard, you learned very early. how important an education is and how important it is to learn. I made 65 now. I have a yearning to learn. And, you know, life really is not long enough to learn everything you want to learn if you've got that attitude. So I feel like I kind of wasted a little time back then, and I wish I'd have worked a little harder during school.
Yeah. Right. Of the people you've lost in your life, who do you miss the most? What is it that you miss about them?
Well, I'm at an age where I've lost a lot of people, and they were all very important to me. I guess if I had to narrow that down, I'd say my stepdad, adoptive dad, for a lot of the reasons I've already said, I could do no wrong. Well, I could do wrong, but he was always supportive and always behind me and backed me. And we had a lot of good times fishing, and he was a big bird hunter, so he taught me to dove hunt and quail hunt and all that sort of thing. So while it was not a real emotional relationship, it was a very important relationship. And I do miss him, and I think about him a lot. What else was I supposed to say?
What about them that you miss?
Okay, well, I miss him being there. And, you know, I also miss my mother. We were very close, I think, probably due to some extent. I was an only child, and the early years were fairly traumatic for her, I'm sure. We were very poor, and she had a child and became a single mother. And I know it's tough. I remember some of the places we lived, and we didn't have much. And so she was, as opposed to my dad, very forthcoming emotionally and important part of my life. And I miss her dearly, too. She's the one that I could call later in life and tell her what was going on and have long, long talks about it late at night. And I miss that. I think, you know, from time to time, I think about, boy, I wish I could call my mother and tell her some of this stuff, particularly about you. But not the case.
Yeah. Okay. Can you tell me about some of the most important lessons you've learned in your life?
Well, I can. We've already talked about some of this, and I may repeat myself, but I think, you know, I've learned through 65 years that, first of all, it's important to work hard toward your goals, which we've already talked about a little bit. I've also learned that in my relationships, I value people that are reliable, you know, people that do what they're going to say. And so it's taught me to always strive to be honest and ethical. And when you tell somebody you're going to do something, you do your best to fulfill that. I'm not sure what else I can say about that.
Okay. The next question is, how would you like to be remembered?
Well, that's a hard one. I think I would like to be remembered, first of all, for my two great sons I've raised. You know, they both turned out to be the kind of people that I would hope. And I would like to be remembered as the kind of person that I've already described, somebody that was honest and ethical and somebody that was reliable. You know, and I've been very fortunate in life. You know, my opinion is, you know, there's a lot of people we call friends these days with Facebook and all that. But real friends, I mean, if you have three or four, five friends that meet those kind of attributes that I've been talking about, that are honest and ethical, and reliable, you're lucky in life. So I would hope that that's the way people think of me.
Yeah. Okay, throughout your life, do you have any regrets that stand out?
Well, as we've talked, Colt, you know, regret for me is not an emotion that I spend a lot of time on. That's not to say that I don't wish I'd done some things differently. You know, as we've already discussed, I wish I had put more energy and worked harder into learning and my education and that sort of thing. I grew up, as we've already talked about, in a very small town, and the 50s and to some extent the 60s were, in a small town, you're fairly isolated. So if anything, I think I set my sights too low. You know, my objective was to get a good job and maybe in a city and be successful at that. In retrospect, just because of what I didn't know at the time, I may have set my sights too low. I had a successful career, and I'm very happy about that. It was interesting beyond words, but I wish I had worked a little harder in school. And regrets, you know, things have happened, and I've done things that, on the one hand, maybe I wish I hadn't done the way I did them. However, they all brought me to where I am now. And so I can't say I would change anything.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, it's not really productive to regret things unless you can take some positive action to correct them. And like I said, I'm where I am. I'm happy. I think I've had a successful life. And really, I wouldn't change a thing in terms of the outcome.
Yeah. What are your hopes and wishes for me, for my children in the future?
Well, I have great confidence that you're going to go far in life. I mean, you, like I said, better than I ever was. You understand what's important in terms of working hard and accomplishing things in school and with your education. I hope, first of all, that you have a happy and successful life, however you define that, you know. I hope that you can develop friendships over the years that, as I have, that people, friendships that last, you know, and there won't be many of them because, you know, it's, I think for me, it's not realistic to think you're going to have 100 friends. My experience has been if you have 2 or 3 or 4 that fall into the category of the kind of people I'm talking about that will be there for you and that will be honest with you and you can rely on them, I hope that for you. And your children. And, you know, things are changing so quickly, it's hard to even anticipate at my age what kind of environment you and your children will live in. But just want you to be happy and successful at whatever that means to you.
Okay, can you tell me a favorite memory of me?
Yeah, I'd say the best memory and the most emotional memory I have of you is the day you were born. It was very positive and fun, and I just was walking on the air. I couldn't wait to get out of the hospital and go tell everybody about you. And then after that, there's dozens and dozens of happy memories that we've had together. All the hunting trips and fishing trips and traveling to places we hadn't been, all that kind of thing. All those events were very positive and very important to me.
Okay, where were our ancestors born?
Okay, as I said earlier, my real father died when I was very young. And so I know a little bit about that side of the family, but most of my knowledge is about my mother's side. And I've actually done some work with Ancestry.com, even once for us to have my DNA tested. And so I know that our ancestors, your ancestors, came from predominantly Western Europe, mostly UK, some small portion Scandinavian, some small portion from what is now Spain, and they all migrated to the eastern coast of the United States and didn't stay there long, apparently. Most of them moved through the southern states, I think probably primarily Alabama, and I'm not real clear on how long they stayed there, but most of them eventually migrated to Texas. I've got records of, on my mother's side, some of my ancestors leaving Alabama and coming to Texas. And so they arrived and settled, like I said, in the country down around Caddo Lake in East Texas. Very sparse, beautiful country, but hard place to make a living at that time. This was, would have been, you know, around the turn of the 20th century. And I've tracked it a lot further back than that, you know, but if you go much further than back, that back, you don't, it's people you didn't know, and it's interesting, but it doesn't have the emotional impact that it does for the people you, that you knew and their direct descendants. So that's kind of in a nutshell where our ancestors came from.
Okay, and follow up, do you know the story of why and how our ancestors came to this country?
Well, I don't really know why they came to this country, although I've read enough history to know generally that most people came to this country because of they felt like they would have more opportunity here. There was a lot of even recruiting going on in Europe and all across Europe at that time. Trying to get people to move to the United States because the United States needed, immigration was very important. They needed immigrants at that point. And they would go over there, companies would send people to Europe to recruit people, and sometimes they would pay their way over here and that sort of thing. So, you know, I can only guess that they came for the promise of a better life, better work, the ability to own land and control their own destiny. I don't know that any of our relatives came specifically for religious persecution or anything like that, which is common reason for immigration, but I think they just, you know, things probably weren't going great for them where they were, and they had heard about America, and they thought they could do better there. I mean, some of our early ancestors were at Jamestown. You know, they were early immigrants to this country. And so, you know, immigration of this family went on for a very long time. So I don't know exactly when they came over or why they came over, but, you know, I have my assumptions about just that they were looking for a better life.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, can you tell me about a time or a specific historic event that had an impact on your life? And what are your most vivid memories of that event?
Okay, I might deviate a little bit on this question. Historically, I'd say the period of time that was most influential to me would be the 60s. I mean, in 1960, I was 8 years old. I came of age in the 60s, went all the way through high school, and started college in 1970. So, everybody knows that the 60s were a very tumultuous time in the history of this country. There's the assassinations of President Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and then the Vietnam War was hanging over my head, and the threat of being drafted and going to Vietnam, and the moon landing, which is a fun and positive memory, and the civil rights movement. And I can talk a little more about that. I remember vividly when I found out, I think everybody does that was living at the time, when Kennedy was assassinated. I mean, he was admired and respected generally. And I mean, it was devastating. I still remember must have been in the sixth grade English class, and the teacher told us, and wow, it was a terrible thing. And not long after that, his brother, Bobby, was assassinated. And not long after that, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And all this together was just, I don't know, it was just a terrible thing for everybody emotionally. And I don't know, it kind of darkened the outlook, I think, for people living during that time. Vietnam War was going on during the 60s. It was in the early 60s. Wasn't a real big thing. There weren't that many Americans there, and over the course of the 60s, it just kept increasing and increasing, and we got more and more heavily involved, to the point that they instituted a draft, an involuntary draft, and people like me were, after I got out of high school, were in direct threat of being drafted and going to Vietnam, which, looking back, I don't remember that hanging over my head. It was hanging over my head, but I don't remember me worrying about it all the time. But I didn't want to go to Vietnam because I knew enough to know that it wasn't a righteous war. It wasn't something that we should be doing. And so who wants to go get killed for something you don't really believe in? And so when I got out of high school, they allowed, if you went to college, they gave you a deferment from the draft, which is a huge incentive to go to college at the time. And so, but after a couple of years of that, I don't remember the time frames exactly, but after a period of being able to get a college deferment from the draft, they did away with the college deferments. And then they went to a draft, a lottery, which they basically had a big lottery, and based on people's birthday, they picked the numbers out of a hat, and the number you got determined the order in which you might be drafted to go to Vietnam. And I got a number which was not terrible and not good. It was kind of right in the middle. And so I never. All that time, I never knew when I might have to quit college and go to Vietnam. And, like I said, I don't remember vividly being afraid of it all the time, but certainly it was something that was hanging over my head. And as luck would have it, they would pick numbers, and whoever was born on the date associated with that number would have to go. And I think my number was like right in the middle somewhere. It was like 145 or something like that. And so that year they got up to 143, I think, like two away from me. So I didn't have to go to Vietnam, which, you know, I'm sorry. It was just luck of the draw. You know, I'm sorry that so many people did have to go and I got out of it, but I really didn't want to go. And so I guess it worked out good for me. And then, you know, as everybody knows, they basically ended the Vietnamese War in early, I don't know, 72, 73, something like that. And so the war ended, and I didn't have to worry about that anymore. On a happier note, you know, I remember staying up late into the night watching the first moon landing on a black and white TV, and that was exciting. You know, it was just almost beyond belief that people, that men could accomplish something like that. So that was fun. And the civil rights movement, of course, was going on all during the 60s, and that was in some ways a good thing from a standpoint of social change, but it was also a scary thing in terms of the, there was a lot of bad stuff happening, riots and people being murdered and things. Civil rights workers were brutally murdered. So all that was traumatic to society, I think, and I look upon it as one of the best things that Lyndon Johnson did, kind of reluctantly, but I think improvements were made in civil rights during the 60s, and I kind of wish that more progress had been made and that it had kept up at the pace that it was going in the 60s. It's kind of, seems like it's kind of fallen backwards lately, or in the last number of years, but that was an interesting time.
Yeah. Okay. Can you tell me about somebody who has mentored you in life?
Well, yes, I've already talked a little bit about my friend and boss at the time, A.V. James. I guess in addition to that, I have had many mentors through my life and career, mostly my career. I began working for the Texas Attorney General's office in about 1980, somewhere around there, and worked there for 25 years. And so there were a number of people there that, man, they were smart people, many of them, most of them lawyers. I was working closely with politics and policy and the legislature. And it was an important job, and I felt like it was important at the time. And some of the people that I dealt with, particularly my good friend still, Tom Laramie, taught me so much about the way government worked and about the way politics worked, and helped me develop my writing style in terms of, you know, I'd always been a fairly good writer, but writing legislation, writing contracts, all that sort of thing, I hadn't had much experience with, and he taught me a great deal about that. And that ability led me to jobs later in life. The ability to write was probably the most important skill I had. Later in life, I went to work for another agency, the Department of Information Resources, and my job was to do $1 million plus contracts, procurements, and much of it was writing contracts and agreements and that sort of thing. So all those people I worked with, not all of them, but people I worked closely with at the Attorney General's office really taught me, had some important skills that served me well later in life. Another one was a friend of mine, very close friend of mine still, Don Bailey. All these people are like me, retired now, but you know, I learned a lot from them, and I really appreciate it.
Thinking of the jobs that you've held, tell me about your most/least favorite.
That's a little hard to do. I've had a lot of jobs. Like I said, I started working when I was probably in the seventh grade. I sacked groceries. I loaded hay from the field to the barns. I worked in a lumber yard. As I said earlier, I worked at a ready-mix concrete plant. I'd say that is the job that I probably have the fondest memories of, because I was a young kid, and I got to the point, I worked there every day after school and on Saturdays, and I got to the point that I was a hand there. You know, I wasn't just a, you know, a gopher. They taught me to drive dump trucks. They taught me to drive front end loaders. They taught me how to mechanic to some extent, and all kinds of stuff. And by the time I was 16 years old, I had my commercial driver's license. I was making deliveries in a dump truck, and I thought I was really important, because you know, none of my friends were doing anything like that. They were still picking up hay out of the fields and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed that. One other time I worked on a construction crew. I guess I must have been about 16, and we went away for the summer to work on the highway, work on the Interstate 20, I guess it was. No, 30. It went from Texarkana up through Memphis. So I lived up in a little town outside of West Memphis, Arkansas, for a couple of months working on the side of the interstate. And that was a learning experience, because we were having to pay for our own room and board, and of course we weren't making much money. So we were staying in a motel that cost a dollar a night. And I had this buddy that was with me, and the first night we checked into the motel, just young kids, you know, never really been anywhere like that. You could actually see through the wall into the next room. And so we got in, and everything was dirty, and we got into the bed, and something started biting us. And so we realized there were bed bugs in the bed. So we went to the store and bought bug spray and sprayed down the beds, and that's the way that whole period of time went. It was rough, but it was, at that age, it was fun too. It was a learning experience. I was there with three or four of my best buddies, and we had a good time. So, you know, I keep talking about all my positive jobs. I do have, I guess my first job out of college, I worked in a steel mill. And again, it was fun. I was working in a steel mill, working weekends and odd hours. And but again, I liked it. The job I didn't like, after I left that job, I got a job with the state working as a child protective service worker, and that was just gruesome. I mean, it was such a sad job that there was really never any what you would consider positive outcomes. It was kind of the lesser of evils if you were successful at it. So I wouldn't recommend that job, and I didn't enjoy it. It was miserable.
Yeah.